crossed his dad's face. I do not have time to beat the bullshit out of you. I can't believe you even said that. Yank your balls out of hiding and stop acting like a bloody sissy. If you want to be the supposed destroyer of nations, then you'll do as I say. Leave this city. Forget about freeing Thomas, and most of all, forget the girl. What if I don't want to forget Isabel? Chris glared. I like her. It got easier to say the second time. And even if you didn't have that stupid bet, I'd marry her.
You would?
Hearing Isabel, Chris turned his head and caught a glimpse of wet-skinned perfection. He gaped, and he might have drooled. Definitely got a boner. To those that might mock, yes, he'd seen many naked women in his life, but none could compare to the sight of Isabel, her skin dewy from the shower, her hair slicked back into a towel, while more skimpy terry cloth barely covered her upper body. It left a lot of leg showing and bare shoulders. Who knew shoulders could be so sexy? She snapped, her fingers long and graceful and perfect to wrap around. Snap. Hello, Earth to Chris. The vision of her jerking him off shattered at her insistence that he pay attention. What?
I asked who you were talking to.
My dad, of course. Except a whip of his head to peer back showed his father gone, leaving behind only the lingering stench of ash and brimstone and an odd pile of melting snow on the carpet. Weird.
Your dad was here?
Isabel clung to her towel as she peeked around.
What did he want?
He wants us to call off the wedding.
Why?
Lie to her. Because he knew what would happen if he told her what Lucifer had said about her father. It would cause a fight. And he didn't want to fight. He had much better plans for Isabel and her towel. But, sigh. The truth weaseled its way out. He says we can't release your dad.
What? Why not? And what does he know about my papa? Is this Lucifer's fault? Why, that devil, I'll...
Slow down, ducky. He claims he's not the one who screwed with your dad, but he seems really keen on making sure we don't set him free.
Why?
Who the fuck knows why? He just pops in here out of the blue, throws my oh-so-awesome sister in my face. He could see the reason behind sibling rivalry. And tells me I can't save your dad, that I can't have you, and then fucking leaves.
He doesn't want us to be together? But what about the bet?
He says he changed his mind about us getting hitched, says he'll pay your grandfather what he owes him.
Oh.
She chewed her lower lip.
I guess you're off the hook then.
What if I don't want to be off the hook? Her gaze met his.
What are you saying?
I'm saying fuck what my dad wants and what your family wants. We've got something happening between us. Something scary and, at the same time, exhilarating. I think we owe it to ourselves to explore it.
We can't explore it.
She glanced down.
Chastity belt, remember?
And? I don't just want you for sex.
It surprised him to realize that was true.
If I did, would I be here?
I don't know.
You embarked on this quest so we could get married. Now you don't have to. You're free to go. Find someone without magical strings attached. But I don't want someone else. And I am not going anywhere. Why would I when the most important thing in my life is standing right in front of me? He sprang from the bed that he might place himself before her. Just a man, with a destiny, blue balls, and a need to make his woman believe him. He dropped to his knees before her. I'm tired of letting others tell me what to do. This is where I want to be. With Isabel, he felt the strength and peace previously lacking in his life. He'd need that in the coming battles.
You know we can't be intimate, she said, her fingers sifting through his hair as he leaned his face against the towel, nuzzling her covered belly.
I know, but just because we can't have sex doesn't mean we can't cuddle.
Cuddling is a fancy word for making out.
He leaned back to grin at her. And? Are you going to tell me you don't want to make out?
Her lips curved in a sweet smile. We really shouldn't.
You're right, we shouldn't, he said, getting to his feet and taking her hand. Your mother would be appalled.
Very.
Your grandfather would have a fit.
Most definitely.
He sat on the bed and tugged at her until she stood between his legs.
But what about you? What do you want?
Do you know that's probably the first time anyone has ever asked me that?
And what does my ducky want?
You.
A man had never heard sweeter words. Then what's stopping us?
Fuck 'em, she murmured, the expletive harsh from her lips and yet erotic at the same time. She leaned over to kiss him, her mouth soft and hesitant, exploring his lips, uncertain and trembling. Didn't she know she could do no wrong? Her mere presence fired his blood. He slid his arms around her and drew her close, manhandling her onto his lap, her legs astride, her towel loosening. She gasped as she grabbed for it, but he tore it away.
Don't hide from me, he growled.
But
will it help if I take off my shirt too?
He leaned back enough to strip it off before hugging her to him tightly. The tips of her tits pressed into his chest, rubbing against him, hard points that he'd suck on as soon as he kissed her some more. Her mouth clung to his with sweet passion, her timid embrace turning fiercer as they unleashed their lust. A fire burned between them, something that only happened when they touched. The whole bed trembled. For all he knew, the world quaked each time they kissed. He knew his entire being shook with the force of his need for this woman. My woman. He might have growled the words against her mouth, and she moaned in reply. He let his mouth travel the length of her fine-boned jaw and down her long neck. He sucked on that tender flesh, sucked hard enough to leave a mark. I marked her. She's mine. Leaning her back in his grip, he exposed those beautiful, pert tits, a nice handful each, rosy-tipped and begging for action. She gasped as he took a nipple into his mouth. Oh, how she squirmed as he sucked it, took it deep, and swirled his tongue around. She clasped his hair, her fingers tugging hard as he lavished attention on her tits, switching from one to the other, biting and sucking and licking and biting and... She wiggled on his lap, bounced, and ground against his hard cock, and despite knowing the chastity belt hid her cunt, he still slid a hand between her thighs. He rubbed that smooth skin, and even if it didn't feel like a pussy, she acted as if he rubbed it. She keened his name. Chris. She rocked hard against his hand, held him close to her breast. Her breath came in hot, heaving pants, and even if his fingers weren't buried deep inside her, he knew when she came. Her body arched. She uttered a small scream, and he felt immense male satisfaction. He'd gotten her to come without his dick. Speaking of which, his prick could use some attention. Letting go of her tit with a wet pop, he gave her a soft kiss and murmured, "My turn." Of course, that was when the fucking dog chose to headbutt the door and utter a giant, "Woof." Chapter 14. Reality arrived in the form of an attention-seeking pooch.
Ignore him, Chris whispered.
And she wanted to. She really did. After the unexpected pleasure Chris had given, she knew he ached. Inexperience didn't mean she was stupid when it came to men and their needs. However, the dog wouldn't allow himself to be ignored.
Woof, woof, woof.
Did she hear censorship in his tone?
What have I done? What happened to waiting for marriage? But this is Chris, the man I love.
A man who'd rejected her once before because they couldn't have sex. Was this his way of circumventing the whole marriage deal?
After all, Lucifer had absolved him of his promise. They didn't have to wed. Not unless they both wanted it. But if she pleasured him now, would he even have a reason to want to stick around? Or were those just pretty words? The doubts, insidious creatures, those things, had her diving for the towel and wrapping it around herself. She had to cover up. He stared at her, making her cheeks flush. Now that they weren't kissing, it felt wrong to remain bare. It didn't take any words for her to feel his disappointment as she headed to the door and opened it. Her big black dog came barreling through and jumped up on the bed where Chris sat moping. Gushy shook his wet fur. Muddy water spattered, most of it on Chris, who looked less than impressed. "Ack, damn it. This is why I want a cat," Chris complained. "Now I smell like wet dog." He grumbled, and yet, she'd never seen a man look sexier, sitting there in just a pair of low-hanging jeans, his upper body bare, his hair tousled. She might wear a chastity belt, but that didn't stop her from feeling things below it. The belt also didn't keep her from experiencing, as their recent makeout session showed. "There are more towels in the bathroom and plenty of hot water," she noted. "Is that a hint I should clean up? How about a strong suggestion that you might want to? Are you going to join me?" he asked, his eyes smoldering with heat. Goshen took that moment to growl, every hackle rising, his lips pulled back. She didn't need the dog to remind her. "I don't think that's a good idea." "I see." His face tightened. "I'm sorry." She felt a need to explain. "What we did? The kissing and the rest." She stumbled to say it, her cheeks so hot she feared they'd blister. "It shouldn't have happened." "It did. And you liked it. Loved it," he reminded. "I didn't hear you saying no." "It was wonderful. Exciting. Toe-curling. And yet, nothing has changed, though. We can't be properly together without marriage." "Ah, yes, the mystical chastity belt. We're in New Orleans. Surely we can find someone to take off the spell." "Except, I don't want to." She was surprised to realize she meant it. "All my life I've been saving myself for my husband. And to be honest, I don't want that to change. I can only give my virginity once. I want that to be the man I plan to spend my life with." His expression turned stony, but she wasn't done. She took a deep breath. "I want that man to be you." At that, he sighed. "Man, you make it so hard to be a selfish dick. You know a part of me is saying leave. Get out. You're free. You don't have to get shackled." Her lips turned down as she heard the truth in his words. "But?" she asked softly. "On the other hand, I feel things for you I've never felt before. You make me want to be a better man. Your man. I don't want anyone else." "I know, and I would kill anyone who dared to try and take you from me."
"What are you saying?"
He raked his fingers through his hair. "I guess what I'm saying is, I want to marry you. I want to make you my wife, my queen, my everything."
"Oh, Chris."
The words melted her. He stood and approached her while she moved toward him, only they couldn't touch because a big wet dog inserted himself between them. "Grrr." Or, as she understood it, "like each other from a distance." "I hate you, dog," Chris grumbled, having to content himself with holding her by the fingertips.
"He's only protecting me."
"Which is why I haven't wrung his fat neck." Growl. "Can it, mutt? I won't lay a hand on your precious mistress." He turned, but not before shooting her a wink and mouthed, "Yet." And that was that. Chris went to the shower, and she alternated between chiding the dog once the door closed and hugging him. Much as she loved Chris, she wanted to do things right. Yes, she lapsed and indulged in carnal pleasures she shouldn't have. but it only served to reaffirm her commitment to not only saving her dad, but also to what she wanted out of life.
I want it all. Husband, love, family.
She did, however, wish that Gushi would let her and Chris snuggle, especially since she woke, hours later, at that witching hour before dawn, to hear a woman's voice whispering,
"She'll never belong to you. She's only using you."
"No, she's not," Chris mumbled.
Who did he talk to?
Opening a single eye, she peeked over to see him in bed, a lump under the covers.
Was he on the phone? What has she given you but trouble?
Again, Isabel heard the voice clear as day. As her mind woke, she realized he couldn't be on the phone, since he didn't have one. She didn't need to turn on the light to notice that no one else was in the room. Enough neon glow came through the cracks in the curtains for her to see everything. Perhaps the speaker crouched, hidden beside the bed and out of sight. Yet that didn't seem possible, because wouldn't her dog have noticed? Goshen snored from his spot at the foot of her bed, not even twitching. Given his size, she'd had to curl into a fetal position to give him enough room.
"No one cares about you. No one wants you."
The woman's voice just kind of spoke, out of thin air. Rising from her nest of blankets, Isabel crossed the short space between the beds to touch Chris, only to have her hand pass through him.
What the hell?
She tried to touch him again, but her hand ended up inside his body, and he shivered in his sleep. He rolled over and she snatched her hand back. She took a step back to her bed and sat down, only to squeak as she almost sat on herself. Standing, she stared down at her body, still in bed, still asleep, a curled-up bundle under the sheets.
What's happening to me? Had she died?
She could see her chest rising and falling, so not dead, but not in her body either. Dreamwalking.
Since when do I do that?
You've lost everything.
There went that female voice again.
Foster mother, home, job, you have nothing left. Your father doesn't want you. Your sisters resent your appearance.
I have my ducky, he murmured.
Still asleep, and yet he thought of her, Isabel smiled. The voice wasn't impressed by his loyalty.
Isabel doesn't want you. She's using you.
That's not true.
Isabel spoke the words aloud and felt a freezing in the air. Despite not having physical flesh, everything in her pimpled as she drew the attention of whatever haunted them in the room. The next words, directed at her, blew past her with an icy chill.
You mean nothing to him. You're just another cunt to fuck.
The crudeness of the words slapped Isabel, but she fought against recoiling or even defending herself.
This is just a dream.
Is it, bitch? Or is this your true subconscious speaking? How about we play a game of truth? Do you really think he'll stick around? What do you have to give? You won't fuck him without a ring, won't even give the poor guy a hand job.
Despite knowing this was a dream, she replied, "He understands why I'm holding back. He loves me."
"Does he? Has he said those words? Why would he love you? You're nobody, just a girl he found in a cemetery with a hot ass he wants to fuck. Dime a dozen. He could drop you tomorrow and never give you a second thought."
The voice pinpointed all of her insecurities, dragged them into the dawning light creeping into the room. But Isabel fought back.
"You're lying."
"Am I?" "You're afraid to give him more of yourself because you think he'll leave you. You think once he sticks his dick inside, the challenge will be gone, and so will he. You don't have what it takes to keep him. You don't deserve him. After all, he is the prince that shall come. He needs a true queen,
not a peasant witch to rule by his side.
"Ducky is my queen."
The words muttered by Chris, who still had his eyes closed, gave Isabel courage to stand tall, her ghostly self facing off against an unseen foe. This wasn't her subconscious. This was pure evil trying to poison the relationship between her and Chris. Who would want to do that?
"Are you his mother?"
A cackle met her, and for a moment, a green swirl, a diaphanous shift in the air, gave the appearance of a woman in the room with them, one with drawn features and cavernous dark eyes.
"I am but a messenger. Heed my words, or pay the price."
With a snap, the green mist disappeared, sending one last jolt of shocking cold. Isabel gasped as she bolted upright in bed. Yes, in bed. She blinked at the room around her, a room bathed in dawning light. A sleepy-eyed Goshen lifted his head and grunted.
Was it all a dream? Enjoy your first dose of reality, bitch.
The disembodied voice made her want to scrub her skin something fierce. She jumped out of bed, for the second time, and shook Chris. This time her hand gripped flesh, and he opened a bleary eye.
"Did you hear that?" she asked.
"No," he said in a fuzzy tone. "I was sleeping, as should you be. It's too early, Ducky."
"I heard a voice."
"Did the voice tell you to have sex with me?" he asked with a leer.
"Chris, be serious. I heard a woman's voice. A nasty one, and she said the most awful things."
Most people would probably call her crazy and tell her she imagined it. Chris groaned. "Probably my mom again."
"She said she wasn't your mom."
Then his words penetrated. "What do you mean, again?" He sighed as he struggled to sit up and keep his eyes open. "She's been talking to me on and off."
"For how long?" she asked.
"Since around the time we met, but it's sporadic."
"And you didn't tell me?"
"It's not exactly the conversation you want to have. Think of it. So, hey, I'm hearing the voice of my psychotic mother who likes to possess dead bodies. Sounds like grounds for a mental evaluation. Besides, I thought I imagined it."
"What does she say when she talks to you?"
"Mostly bullshit about joining her. Dumb crap I don't listen to because I don't really care. It's too early to be talking about my mom." He reached out to grab hold of Isabel and dragged her into bed with him, ignoring Goshen's growl. She allowed herself to snuggle against him, loving the feeling of his warm flesh against hers, but she didn't let it distract her.
"What does your mother want?"
He shrugged, his bare skin against hers enough to send a shiver coursing through her body. The wanton in her wanted to come out, wanted him. She loved him, which was why the fact that he had some woman talking to him from the ether was so disturbing. Even more disturbing was that Isabel had heard it too.
"I don't like it," she stated.
"Neither do I. The thought of her keeping tabs on me is rather disturbing. A man likes to think he's got some privacy to do things."
"You think she's watching us?"
Again, he shrugged. "No idea. It's not like we've had many talks. If the voice I hear is even my mother. I've never met the woman." A hint of bitterness in there. "How can I know for sure?"
"Maybe Madame Laveau can shed light on who she is."
"If I cared. The woman gave me up, abandoned me, and never looked back. As far as I'm concerned, my birth mother can take a flying fucking leap. I'm not interested. There's only one woman who interests me." He nuzzled Isabel, the feel of his lips on her skin sending exciting shivers of remembrance through her. Woof. Scratch. Goshen wasn't about to let them indulge in anything, though. Her dog was turning out to be even more effective than her chastity belt. "I don't suppose we can ignore him?" The rancid smell of a dog fart made it clear they couldn't. After letting the pooch out to do his business, Isabel hit the shower, alone. Getting dressed out of the bag they'd brought in didn't take long. By the time Chris got out of the shower, her hellhound had returned and effectively plopped himself between them, demolishing any ideas she might have about dirtying Chris when he emerged wearing only a towel. Then it was off to find Madame Laveau, who, as it turned out, didn't live in a cemetery, despite the fact that she'd been dead a while, but an older, restored home in the Tremé-Lafitte area, a neighborhood bordering the French Quarter, where she used to live. Isabel had called Evangeline for that information, and then suffered through her sister's harangue.
"Where is she?" Isabel asked as soon as Eva answered. "In the cemetery, duh, it's where dead people live. I know she's not dead, and I know you lied.
For your own good, little sister, stay away from the voodoo queen. I need your help."
"Her help comes with a steep price.
I can pay it."
"She'll try and trick you."
"I can handle it. Just tell me where to find her. And don't you dare say the cemetery again."
In the end, Eva told her what Isabel needed to know. Again. This time, without trying to send her to the wrong location, but as her stomach churned with butterflies, Isabel almost wished Eva had sent them on a wild goose chase.
"Nice place," Chris observed as they parked at the curb. She could only hope they wouldn't get ticketed and towed, but she didn't know where else to put her car, just like she didn't know what to do with Goshen. She cranked down all the windows and admonished him to stay. His doggy expression made it clear he'd do whatever he damn well pleased. He was so cute like that. The house that her sister directed her to was a two-story mansion flanked by smaller homes. The wooden plank exterior was painted a vivid blue and accented with white, door trim, window casings, shutters, picture postcard perfect. A black wrought iron fence guarded the very shallow front yard, the tops of the posts speared points to deter any climbers. Beyond it, concrete steps led up to a veranda that swept the full length of the first floor. Massive posts embedded in the porch extended up and supported a second-story balcony, what the locals like to call the gallery. Enclosed on three sides, its spindle rails were painted white, and colored glass hung down from the bars, tinkling when a breeze caught them, refracting light when a ray hit them a certain way.
"Doesn't look like a witch's house," Chris noted.
"This isn't her original home. That's in the French Quarter, a few streets over.
I guess staying there would have made it too easy for people to figure out her secret."
At his observation, she shook her head. "More like she outgrew it. Madame Laveau was perhaps influential for her time, but back in the 1800s, she was still a woman, a mulatto one at that, living in a man's world. Her original house was probably the best she could do without a rich husband. Now..." She looked up at the historic building, restored to its original glory, including the fleur-de-lis details. "She can live wherever she wants and as grandly as she likes. She has no need to hide, just like she has no need to advertise. People just know about her. At least those in the magical world did. People like her sister, who kept secrets from Isabel in the name of protecting her. More like they didn't want to share in the magic. Perhaps Isabel had started out not having any magic, but thanks to her association with Chris, abilities were beginning to appear. Perhaps I am just a late bloomer. If people know about her and her skills, then why were you looking for a protective charm to visit her? Why not just knock on her door and engage her services? She cast him a glance. Because she's dangerous? Don't confuse the fact that she conducts business with her need to keep herself safe. We're not here to threaten her. Will she believe that? By our very birth, she will see us as threats or tools.
I won't be used, said quite firmly.
She may not give you a choice. According to Eva, she is known for driving hard bargains and for not always keeping her promises.
She will if she knows what's good for her. Light flared in the depths of his eyes, his hellish heritage coloring his words.
Exactly the wrong thing for this situation. She placed a hand on his arm, and a stiff wind whipped past, hard enough to jangle the beads. Let me do the talking. My sister dealt with her once or twice before and gave me some tips. In other words, pussyfoot around and kiss her ass. He rolled his eyes. We could just announce who I am. She'll be sure to want to see us then. Smart witches want to help the future king of hell. The boast earned him a side eye. You don't have to announce to everyone you meet that you're the Antichrist. Why not? He frowned. Are you ashamed of me? No, but I'd rather not have to fight my way out of every situation just because people think they can hold you hostage against Lucifer. Ha! They'd be wasting their time. Dad wouldn't lift a pinky to help me. You don't know that. Please, we both know my dad hates me. He doesn't hate you. She tried to make it sound real. He didn't buy it. I can hear the lie. Okay, he hates you, but that's only because he barely knows you. She hadn't been too sure about Chris at first either, but the more she got to know him, the more she fell for him. He had many layers, some of them arrogant and foolhardy, but others hurting and in need of a hug. He thinks I'm a disgrace. He thinks all his kids are a disgrace. Not Muriel. His expression soured. Are you jealous of your sister? Yes. But she's your sister. She didn't do it on purpose. And your point is? Are you going to tell me you're not jealous of yours? Much as she'd like to deny it, Isabel had to sigh and say, Yes, but I still love her. All her life, Isabel wanted to be more like Evangeline, with her confident air and kick-ass magic. However, she could understand resentment because always being compared to her more accomplished magical sister burned. Love your sis all you want. Me? I was happy being an only child. But just think of it. Now you have someone to give noogies to. I don't need sisters to do that. I used to give them to kids in school all the time. You're just determined to not give your siblings a chance, Isabel glared. Give me a break. A month ago, I was an only kid whose mom was in jail for murder and whose dad took off when I was a baby. Now, I've got a new mom, a dad, and sisters, too. Embrace it. I don't want to. Too bad. Now you get to experience the joys of being tortured by family like the rest of us. His turn to turn a hard stare on her. You're a killjoy. But cute. She smiled and patted his cheek. Now, put away that pout and throw on your nice face. We need to make a good impression. I don't see why we can't just bust our way in and demand answers. He flexed his fists. That might be what your dad would do, but in my family, the art of subtlety is recommended. And if it doesn't work, then we'll bust the shit out of the place. Because patience and honey only went so far. Chapter 15. Behave, behave. Chris kept repeating the word over and over as his skin itched. Something emanated from the house, a vibrating force that made his teeth quiver. It could have just been some highly charged air from power lines passing nearby. But he knew better. It was magic. Lots of it. Strong magic. Possibly stronger than him. As if his doubts drew attention, the damned whisper was back. Don't go inside. Stay away from the witch. You won't find help here. Come to me. I'll give you what you need. What he needed was for the ghostly voice of his mother to shut up. Except maybe it wasn't so ghostly. Isabel claimed to have heard it that morning, and yet, expression intent on their objective, she didn't seem to hear it now. What game are you playing, mother? Did he need to worry about Isabel? It was one thing to threaten Chris. He was a big boy with budding powers, but no one threatened his ducky. While not a heroic or selfless person by nature, Chris nonetheless felt something protective when it came to her. Possessive and jealous, too. Mine. All mine. His mind rubbed the words gleefully. Head held high, chin tilted, Isabel pushed open the wrought iron gate, which didn't creak. Kind of a letdown, given that this was supposedly the house of a powerful witch. He'd kind of expected more ambiance, a few more spiderwebs on the brick inlay on the ground, maybe some peeling paint. But everything appeared fresh and bright. Perhaps the inside would meet his expectations. Stepping past the fence, showing no signs of trepidation, Isabel skipped up the concrete steps and rapped on the wooden front door. Large and dual-paneled and stained a deep black, it was at least 8 feet high and impressive. Mine will be bigger one day. At least 10 feet. And no, it wasn't strange for him to have an idea in mind of the home he'd one day own. As future king, Chris would have the grandest home. No, make that castle. Wait, wasn't a palace bigger? Whatever. He'd have the biggest fucking one, with staff to clean it. And a cook. His days of opening his own can of ravioli were over. A young man answered the door, his dark hair hanging in long dreadlocks, tied off at the ends with colorful beads. His complexion was dark but clear and showed no wrinkles. He couldn't have been any older than Chris, with his shirt declaring, "Bourbon Street, the birthplace of jazz." "What do you want?" The man crossed his arms, showcasing impressive pipes, and regarded them without a smile or any hint of welcome. "Nice way to run a business." Undaunted, Isabel smiled. "Hello, my name is Isabel Rasputin." "And?" "You are?" she prodded. "Guillaume, who doesn't care? If you're selling something, I'm not interested." "I'm here on business." "Still not interested." Chris held his tongue. He'd let Isabel play things her way, but he could tell that this wouldn't go anywhere. A pinched look appeared around Isabel's eyes, but she kept her tone smooth and her expression pleasant. "I'm sure if you told your mistress my name, she'd want to see us." "What mistress?" The guy leaned against the jamb, still blocking their way. "This is my home, and I'm telling you to leave. Now." "We are not leaving. We are here to see Madame Laveau." "Wrong address." Guillaume went to slam the door, but Chris inserted his foot. "We know she's here." He finally spoke, tired of the bullshit. Guillaume's startling blue gaze met his. "Madame Laveau has been dead since 1881. If someone told you otherwise, then rest assured they were pranking you." The guy shoved on the door, which still had Chris's foot wedged. "You can stop with the lying. I can smell it," Chris growled. His ability to sense truth from falsehood only grew stronger. "Do you know who you're dealing with?" "An asshole who thinks he's a big shot." The foot Chris had wedged got kicked out, and the door slammed shut, then deadbolted for good measure. "Motherfucker," Chris swore, his brow creased and his lips pursed, a volcano about to erupt. "Maybe we should have called first," she said, grabbing his hand and giving him a tug. "Make an appointment like everyone else?" The very idea affronted. "I'm sorry. It never occurred to me that they would deny us entrance. As a Rasputin, usually my name gets me in everywhere." Again, she pulled at their laced fingers, but Chris wouldn't budge. He'd come here for answers, and by all that was unholy, he'd get some. "Fuck calling. I am the Branch of the Terrible Ones." A new title he'd not yet used, but which seemed appropriate for the occasion. He couldn't see it. However, he could feel the burning heat in his eyes, the flames of hell dancing. "They will not deny me." He didn't touch the door. He didn't have to. It blew open, and by blow, he meant it exploded into a million pieces, shards that hovered in the air, suspended in front of an open-mouthed man whose eyes were wide, and finally held a measure of respect. "Tell your mistress," Chris growled, "that Christopher Percy Baphomet is here, also known as the Abomination of Desolation, the Antichrist." Lips curved into a welcoming smile.
Well, damn, man, why didn't you say that before?
The fellow took on a more respectful mien.
Come in, come in. Wouldn't want to leave the Antichrist out on the street.
That's more like it, grumbled Chris. He stepped around the hovering splinters of wood. Isabel tucked in behind him. Inside, his skin prickled more than ever. Magic hung heavily in the air. Thus, he wasn't surprised when the remnants of the door suddenly whooshed back into place, knitting themselves together until the solid portal resumed its shape.
Cool, Chris observed.
Necessary, Guillaume remarked, given how often the police show up with their battering rams looking for drugs.
Wouldn't it be easier to bribe them to look the other way? Isabel asked.
In my family, we find subtlety sometimes works better than force.
Bah, bribing is a waste of money. We have nothing to hide, so we let them come. They never find anything. Drives the police captain mad.
And that's a good thing? She asked.
Yes, when the captain is your ex-lover. Guillaume grinned. I dumped his ass, and he just can't let it go. 20 years now, and still harassing me.
20 years? How old was Guillaume when he had the affair?
Have you worked for Madame a long time? Isabel asked.
Long enough.
Then you must have met my sister.
Isabel indulged in conversation while Chris took in their surroundings. Gray. Everything was gray, from the hardwood floors with the semi-gloss finish over gray wood to the walls a slightly lighter shade. The furniture could have provided some colorful relief, yet the decorator had chosen pieces of white that reflected the gray. Elegant. New. Yet a sense of age permeated everything.
I did indeed have the pleasure of meeting the wickedest witch, quite the woman. If I swung the other way, we could have indulged in much trouble. I like mayhem.
The blue-eyed gaze was aimed at Chris. He knew that look. He usually gave that look. To women, he'd add. He wasn't quite sure how he felt about Guillaume turning it on him.
This place is larger than it appears on the outside, Isabel remarked, which drew Chris's attention to the fact that the hallway extended for a long ways ahead of them.
Various doorways, pairs of pocket doors of the same faded gray, were shut, not offering any glimpses into the rooms or their contents.
Madame enjoys her space. We could have opted for something physically larger in the French Quarter, but then we wouldn't have access to places like this.
To punctuate his statement, he finally gripped the handles of a pair of sliding doors, opening them with a flourish, revealing a very green garden. Not a garden, Chris realized as they stepped in, but a conservatory, the more fancy version owned by the rich. Or the magically inclined. Underfoot, he could see gray tile, the majority of it covered by creeping vines and lush green moss. After the austerity of the house, the color was welcome, especially the bright blooms popping from branches and stems. And the smells. An inhalation through his nose meant a burst of odors, the sweetness of the flowers, the scent of things growing, and the skunky smell of pot.
How did the cops not find that? He asked, pointing to the very obvious plant.
You don't seriously think they let the police into the true heart of the house, do you? Isabel muttered. You'll have to excuse him. He's still learning about the underworld that exists with magic. An Antichrist still in his infancy. Guillaume snickered. And yet he dares to come here making demands.
Who makes demands?
The rich voice came from deeper in the jungle. A woman appeared, regal of bearing, her hair bound in cloth, a bright red, which proved a shocking contrast to the gray and green. The turban matched her flowing gown of the same color. Her lightly tanned complexion shone with health, and her dark-lashed eyes snapped with curiosity and intelligence. Emanating from her, more of that skin-tingling power. Her gaze fixed him, pushed against him, and he heard his mother whisper,
"Don't you dare bend a knee to this upstart."
He didn't plan to.
"Who have you brought to me, Guillaume? I didn't know we were expecting visitors."
It didn't take much to guess who he faced.
You must be Madame Laveau.
Isabel dropped into a curtsy.
Madame, a pleasure to meet you.
Chris wasn't about to bow or show obeisance to anyone. It bothered him that Isabel did. A future queen should kneel to no one. The piercing gaze moved to his ducky and examined.
You are Rasputin's granddaughter. Isabel, if I recall. You have the look of your mother. Thank you, madame.
Who was this eyes downcast, soft-spoken woman? Chris had gotten used to his fiery woman and found this version of her perturbing.
I don't believe I recognize this young man sporting the mighty scowl.
Crossing his arms over his chest, he smirked. You're supposed to be all-powerful and whatnot. Why don't you guess?
Playing games with me?
Laveau arched a brow, and her full lips pursed.
I am not a woman to be trifled with.
Perhaps I'm not a man you should fuck around either. Isabel gasped, and Guillaume moved away, perhaps to avoid the splatter of blood. Yet Madame Laveau did not slay him where he stood. Rather, she laughed, a rich and bold sound.
I see you are your father's son. How is the devil these days?
Proving, she jerked him around and knew exactly who he was. Dad is still a dick and not the point of this visit.
What is the point, then? Or are you merely paying a social call?
We're here because we need information, Isabel offered.
Do I look like a library or an encyclopedia?
A what? Chris asked.
A big book of knowledge. You don't see them much anymore, Isabel muttered. Nowadays we use wiki.
Uttering a snort, Laveau turned from them.
I am a busy woman. I don't have time for idle questions and chatter.
What if I said we had payment?
I'm not interested in money.
What about something magical and priceless?
Isabel slid her hand into her purse and withdrew the mortar and pestle they'd taken from Baba Yaga. Madame whirled and couldn't hide her surprise. It was only a slight widening of her eyes and the barest flare of her nostrils, but Chris noted it.
What use do I have for those things?
She waved a hand.
I have my own magic, my own methods of travel.
My bad. Maybe I can trade this for information elsewhere.
Isabel hid the mortar from sight, and Chris noted how Laveau's eyes followed it.
We wouldn't want such an object to go to one who won't appreciate it. Perhaps we can come to an arrangement. You did, after all, come all this way.
The wide smile didn't reassure at all.
Come, sit.
Laveau led them deeper into the conservatory, the brightness of the glass roof overhead dimming as the foliage grew denser. How big was this place? Eventually, they emerged into a clearing set with a wrought-iron table and two chairs. He waved Isabel to one while Madame took another. Of Guillaume, he was irritated to note the man was gone, having somehow slipped away without Chris noticing. Good. One less person to worry about. He kept his eyes on Laveau as she waved her hand in the air, somehow calling forth a silent servant, her head bowed, dressed head to toe in gray. It startled him to realize he'd not even known the woman hid in the shadows. A tray was set on the ornate wrought-iron table, holding a pitcher of yellow liquid with slices of lemon and chunks of ice floating in it. Three glasses sat on the tray, along with some kind of pastry covered in powdered sugar. Madame let the servant pour them each a glass, as well as use tongs to place the treats on plates. As they were handed their snacks, Madame explained,
"Fresh lemonade and beignets, made from scratch and filled with blackberry jam."
Isabel didn't touch the offering. Chris, on the other hand, thought it looked damned good. Besides, he had a stomach of iron, as Baba Yaga had learned. He bit into the crispy, still warm pastry and groaned as the flavors hit his tongue. "Now that's fucking good," he exclaimed.
"You're not eating?"
Madame Laveau observed to Isabel.
"I'm not hungry, thank you. More like you repugn my hospitality and insult me."
For a moment, a dangerous light lit Madame's gaze.
"We didn't come to eat and drink, but for information.
Ah, yes, the little lost girl wishes to free her father.
You know of our quest? Isabel leaned forward in her seat. How? Who told you?
The spirits are quite restless these days. There are things happening in the world, momentous things.
Do you know how to free my papa?
Such a direct question for a complicated answer.
I'd say it's pretty straightforward, Chris drawled. Do you or don't you know how to get her father back from wherever he is?
The dark gaze settled on him.
Yes, I know how, but that doesn't mean I believe it should be done.
A moo of discontent pulled Isabel's lips.
Why is everyone so set against me freeing him?
Because, should you free your father, then you will release something else. Something that will bring about the end of mankind as we know it.
I thought that was my job, Chris replied, having finished his beignet and half of his lemonade. You know, Prince of Darkness and all that shit.
You are but one of the pieces to the prophecies of the darkness coming. There are thresholds that must be met, events that must unfold before it happens. Freeing your father is one of those steps.
How can Papa be responsible? He wouldn't do anything to end the world.
You're right, he wouldn't. His only goal was to stop it from happening, hence his sacrifice.
A crease marred Isabel's brow.
I don't understand.
Would it matter if you did? Madame asked. You're a daughter missing the love of her father. Reason won't change your mind. You think you must free him.
Don't. He must remain a prisoner.
The words floated to Chris, and he frowned.
So did Madame. Her gaze turned sharp.
What is that? Who dares speak in my sanctuary?
Laughter floated through the trees, rustling the branches, sending a cold shiver through them all.
It's just my mother, Chris replied. She tends to speak out at the most awkward moments.
An expression of fright pulled Laveau's features taut.
So, she has found a way to communicate beyond the veil. Not good. Not good at all.
Madame stood.
This meeting is over.
Isabel jumped to her feet.
But you still haven't answered our question. How do I free my father?
Then, because Isabel hadn't forgotten.
And who is Chris's mother?
You don't yet know?
Madame Laveau sounded most surprised.
Tell us. I will not speak that name without a price.
Isabel slammed the mortar and pestle down.
Here is your price.
One gift for two answers? A poor bargain. I will give you one. Choose, your father or his mother.
Madame Laveau bargained with a nod of her head at each of them in turn.
It's only a name, Isabel stated, hardly a fair trade. Surely we can bargain something else for that information.
She is not one who should be named. She is not someone to trifle with.
I don't care about her name, Chris interjected. We'll find that out on our own. Give us back Isabel's father.
I shan't give you anything.
Then give back the mortar. He held out his hand.
You cannot take back a gift, and your rudeness will not be tolerated.
What are you going to do about it? Chris asked with a sneer. You know who I am.
I do, and lucky for me, you've not yet fully come into your powers.
Take them.
Expecting people to attack, Chris was caught off guard as, instead, something twined around his ankles. Vines wrapped around him tightly, so tight and so quick he couldn't react, couldn't save himself, as they wound around every inch of him, leaving only his head free. Struggling proved futile. Poor Isabel was bound up in similar fashion. He called for his magic, demanded that his power come and free him. Nothing happened. Not one fucking thing. I really need a fucking instruction manual on magic. Because times like this, where he felt helpless, sucked. Especially when the witch wore a satisfied smirk as she moved to stand before him.
There is one sure way to end the coming darkness. Kill you, and we put a stop to the prophecy. Kill you both, and I will have the power to live forever.
The laughter grated on his nerves, but he didn't have to listen to it long because Madame held out her hand and blew powder in his face. He couldn't help but suck it in, and despite his resistance to most drugs, this one hit him hard, hard enough to send him spiraling into darkness. A hellish interlude. The snow in hell had melted. Muriel had once again saved the day. Bloody overachiever. Where had she gotten her instincts to fight evil and to do the right thing? Probably from her mother, another woman who'd borne him a child that he couldn't remember. He really had to be more careful who he fucked. Bad enough, he usually had a bunch of daughters to give him a headache. Now he had a son. A son someone dared mess with. He almost felt something, most likely indigestion. Still, it twinged him something hard as he stared down at Chris's limp form. Bloody idiot. Thinks he's so fucking powerful. Chris would be, one day. The power in him still simmered, quietly brewed in that fragile body of his. Which made the odd surges of real strength consternating. Was his mother behind the occasional bouts of true magic? As if that woman would share in the glory. Lucifer had finally figured it out, knew who she was. Why she was angry. Some chicks just didn't know how to let go. Then again, who could blame her? He truly was the king of sin, and when it came to fucking, he tended to ruin women for anyone else. But he couldn't abide clingy chicks. The devil was meant to be a single swinging dude. Christopher's mom never understood that. Much like Neptune's ex, she'd required extreme measures, a banishment to another dimension. One now sporting a crack. A crack he predicted was about to get blown wide open, meaning she would return. He hated dealing with ex-girlfriends, especially those who'd given him a child. You can forget me paying child support. She'd probably emerge from her prison with a chip on her shoulder. A valid one, but still, it didn't mean he'd let her rampage and use their son to destroy the world. I could end it now, kill the boy and save myself some grief. Taking the easy way out tempted. Except, killing Chris may not stop the coming apocalypse, and he might be the only one who could stop it. Decisions, decisions. Maybe he should flip a coin to decide his son's fate. Help us. The soft plea, womanly in nature, startled him. Yes, startled the Lord of Hell, which made him bluster. How are you doing that? You're not supposed to have any magic. Rasputin had assured him that Isabel had none. Apparently, she didn't take after her father or mother. Yet there she stood, her ghostly figure wavering while her body still lay on the stone floor beside Christopher's. Spirit walking, a rare skill these days since the ancient shamans had lost their way. Are you here to help us? She asked again. Madame Laveau did something to Chris, to both of us. She glanced at her inert body. I think she is planning to kill us. Sacrifice is actually the word you're looking for. Which would leave his hands clean. Problem solved. I'm so glad you came to stop her. You think I'm here to save you? Act the part of savior? How gross. I just popped in for a last look.
Aren't you going to do something?
Her tone emerged quite accusing. Do what? You got into this mess. I told the boy to leave your father alone. He should have listened.
He did it for me.
Yes, he did. He went out and did the wrong thing because you made him swear he would so he could get into your pants. Rather selfish of you, I must say, Lucifer stated. And I should know. I'm the king of selfish deeds.
I just wanted him to do something to prove he wants me.
Isn't the constant boner in his pants enough proof?
I want love, not sex.
You want to make him into someone he isn't. My son is not a hero. He's not even a nice guy. I found his file. And had corrected the paternal portion of it.
It was a thick folder, hefty enough to almost make him proud. He's a thief, a slacker, a dick to women, a drug user, and a liar. You want